You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Of course he didn't pick up the check. Of course he stiffed those dumb motherfuckers. It's ancient news now, I realize. Last Tuesday was a whole ass week ago, so this might as well have happened before the release of Home Alone 2. But Donald Trump went from his arraignment in a federal courtroom in Miami to a Cuban restaurant for a campaign stop, where he was met by a cheering crowd and cable news networks that still haven't learned the lesson of 2016. And before he left, Trump called out to the cheering crowd, "Food for everybody." Now, we all know what shouting something like that means or is supposed to mean or what most people are going to think it means. Shout drinks for everybody in a bar, and that means you're buying. It doesn't mean the proprietors of this drinking establishment are willing to serve alcoholic beverages to any members of the public over the age of 21 who can afford to purchase said beverages. But you can argue, on a technicality, drinks for everybody, food for everybody doesn't mean I'm buying necessarily. It could be interpreted or spun as an observation, not an offer or a promise. There are drinks for everybody who can afford to pay their own tab in a bar. There is food for everybody who can afford to pay their own check in a restaurant. But everyone in the room at that moment, everyone in that Cuban restaurant in Miami, thought Trump meant lunch was on him. Because of course they did. And that's what he wanted them to think. Because he wanted them to cheer for him. And he wanted the cameras to capture the crowd cheering for him when he said it. And that's what he got. And he was willing to screw every supporter of his in that room to get it. And forgive me for talking about Trump. I realize you can get Trump talk basically everywhere all the time, and you might come here for a break from the Trump talk, but it was talk about Trump, talk about this, or talk about the college professor who got caught fucking his border collie in a public restroom, and given a choice between Trump and that, I chose Trump. So Donald Trump conned a bunch of people. He stiffed a bunch of people. That is a dog bites man story. I realize Donald Trump stiffs his lawyers, which is why he can't find any anymore. He stiffs his contractors when he was still building buildings, and now he stiffs his supporters. And unlike lawyers, his supporters, they don't care. No one wants to be his lawyer anymore because lawyers like to get paid and they do not like to go to jail. But his supporters, the people who keep sending him checks and cheering for him in Cuban restaurants, they don't care. And there's no use pointing out to Trump supporters that he's screwed them and is going to keep screwing them. I'm not pointing it out to any Trump supporters right now. I am pointing it out to you, Savage Lovecast listeners, and I'm pretty sure none of you are any of them. But I gotta say, if they don't care when he rips them off, if they don't care if he rips them off, I don't care either, or I don't care anymore, or I'm trying not to care. The January 6th committee found that the Trump campaign took in $250 million from supporters to pay for legal fees to investigate the 2022 presidential election, and all of that money disappeared into Trump political action committees, into his own pocket, and they don't care, and they keep sending money. So why should I care? The most appalling story in the run-up to 2020 may have been Trump tricking supporters into making weekly donations instead of one-off donations. Instead of clicking a box on an internet form to make your donation weekly, you had to unclick a box that had been pre-clicked for you on that form to avoid making your donation weekly. And Trump, the billionaire, drained the meager life savings of supporters who were literally dying of cancer and couldn't pay their rent, and they voted for him anyway. They don't care. Why should I? Look, I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I have a moral imagination. I am capable of empathy. Unlike a Republican, it doesn't have to happen to me personally for me to see the wrong or harm or injustice in something. But fuck these people. I am so tired of these people. I want Trump to bleed these people, his supporters, his idiotic supporters dry. Let them eat Trump flags. Because my favorite kind of shitty racist, or my second favorite kind of shitty racist, is the broke kind. The kind who can't afford to travel to Miami to join a protest outside a federal courthouse after their cult leader gets his ass indicted for the second, but certainly not the last, time. Donald Trump, in case you're listening, bleed them dry, take everything they have, leave your supporters destitute, unable to pay for their Lynx fees at the villages, and unable, once you're put away, to donate a red cent to the authoritarian grifter who will take your place. And I gotta say, one nice thing about the last week was seeing people wearing their ITMFA t-shirts and pins again. We raised hundreds of thousands of dollars in 2017 and 2018 for progressive groups by selling ITMFA merch. ITMFA, of course, stands for Impeach the Motherfucker Already, or it did. Can also stand for Indict the Motherfucker. Can also stand for Incarcerate the Motherfucker. So those ITMFA t-shirts, those ITMFA pins, still relevant, haven't gone out of style yet. Nice to see people out there still wearing them. And in other news, yes, I am watching The Ultimatum Queer Love per the request of several listeners. What do I think? Well, I hate fake romantic stakes, which are a given on reality dating shows, but watching, think Lexi is kind of a bully. I feel sorry for Vanessa almost. I think Tiff should marry her fucking dog. But mostly, I think lesbian dating shows should have lesbian hosts. Why have a straight lady when you could have Cameron Esposito, Fortune Feimster, Leah Delaria, Suzanne Westenhofer, if they were willing to demean themselves by hosting this train wreck? Hell, maybe Kate McKinnon might have done it if they'd thrown enough money at her. Quick note for Magnum subs, I'll be hosting another edition of Savage Love Live next Thursday, June 29th, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Note that special time. We will be streaming to you live from the Aspen Ideas Festival, where I'm speaking. I'll be answering questions with the tech-savvy at-risk youth. Links will be sent out to Magnum subs Thursday morning, also posted to savage.love. If you would like to join us for Savage Love Live, and it's always really fun, become a Magnum sub now at savage.love. You will get invites to things like Savage Love Live. You get the Magnum Savage Love Cast, the Maxi Savage Love Column, and the Bonus Sex and Politics podcast. All right, coming up on the Micro and the Magnum, culture writer Rebecca Fishbein joins me to talk about therapy speak and how it's damaging our relationships. If you don't know what therapy speak is and you want to see toxic therapy speak in action, stop what you're doing right now and go watch a couple episodes of The Ultimatum Queer Love. And on the Magnum, sociologist Dr. Kelsey Burke joins me to talk about her new book, The Pornography Wars. This episode is brought to you by Beducated, the leading platform for pleasure-based sex education for adults. Go to Beducated.com and use the code SAVAGE for an exclusive 40% off. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Go to HelixSleep.com/SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm a bi married woman, and my husband and I have been having some problems related to my use of medical marijuana. And because of this, we have trust issues. And so I was going through his home one day and discovered that he had been on a live cam site, and one of them was like a gay couple. So when I talked to him later about it, he said that he had accidentally clicked on it. And I was like, okay, whatever. Well, since the beginning of the year and everything, we've been more experimenting in the bedroom. So me doing kind of more acid to him, he was loving it. He started doing some to me, loving it. And so just kind of playing with that a little bit. And so me feeling like maybe he was more queer than he knew about or whatever. And, like, I'm totally a safe person to come out to. I've made sure that he knows that. And he's made it clear that, like, no, he does not like penis, whatever. Well, then the other day I'm going through his watch, which, again, I don't like that I'm doing this shit, but that's just where we're at in our relationship right now because of the trust issues. And I see that there's a weird number that had texted him an eggplant, a, like, splash thing, and a peach. And so when I confronted him about it, it was a coworker who was pranking him, he said, because he works in cell phone service. So he said that he was with a customer. He looked down and he saw that text, and it was from a coworker. And apparently this other coworker has done the same prank to another person at work or whatever. But to me, I don't know. I just feel like there's some weird things going on that just point to is there something going on with him and this coworker? Like, am I nuts? He has it out to be that I'm just paranoid because I smoke marijuana now. And I just feel like there's more to it. I don't know if he's necessarily cheated. I don't know if he's maybe flirted with the idea. I don't know if he's, like, jacking off in the back office with this coworker or what the fuck. But what happens is anytime I try to bring that up, I'm always made to be, like, kind of the crazy one. And then the blame gets put back on me that I'm using this marijuana because he's sober. And I'm a person in recovery, but I just use marijuana for pain.
Let's worst case scenario this, shall we? Your husband is bi and he's not ready to tell you yet. Maybe he's not comfortable yet with what it means and what it might mean for him, for his relationship, that he is indeed seeking out gay porn, that he is swapping eggplant and peach emojis with random numbers. Might not be a coworker, could have lied to you about that, could have come from anybody, and that he's suddenly enjoying butt stuff. Who knows what's going on between his ears while you're railing his ass? He could be closing his eyes and pretending you're a dude. Worst case scenario, that's what's going on here. All right, so maybe stop hunting for evidence of that which you should assume to be quite possibly the case, that your husband is seeking out homosexual erotica, gay porn, gay camming, and is flirting with the idea of maybe messing around with a dude, but isn't ready yet to ask you for permission or to come out to you. That's understandable. You're invested in him being a straight guy, and he's invested perhaps in him being perceived to be a straight guy. If he's only just now realizing, if you've been snooping on him throughout your entire marriage and you're only just now uncovering this evidence of perhaps some same-sex desires, if he's only just realizing he might be bi, he might not be ready quite yet to talk about it with the most important and consequential person in his life, the person that when he does have this conversation with her, it's going to be the highest of stakes, the highest stakes version of that conversation with you. Yeah, I don't think it's nice or fair that he's gaslighting you, that he's pointing to you having stumbled over or seeking out the porn he's watching and it's gay, and the emojis he's swapping, which are pretty gay, and the kind of gayishness going on in your bedroom now with butt stuff. Not all butt stuff is gay, but, you know, coded gay. It's not okay that he's pointing at your pot use, you using pot for pain and saying you're just being paranoid, because those are three pretty big black dots and they're not quite connected, but they're not hard to connect. But you should be able to wrap your head around the fact that, okay, maybe he's bi and he's not ready to tell me. You asking him if he's bi is a way, hopefully you did it in a positive way. So you signaled to him that he can tell you and you'll be fine with it when he's ready to tell you. He might not yet be ready to tell you. Sometimes it's easier to come out to strangers. Sometimes it's easier to tell a truth to somebody that doesn't matter to you. And it's practicing telling that truth to people who don't matter to you that gives you the courage to finally have that conversation, to tell those truths to someone who does matter to you very much. In the meantime, though, he needs to stop fucking gaslighting you. Saying to him, look, I don't care what you're jacking off to. I don't, so long as it's fantasy, so long as we are monogamous and you're not putting me at any risk, I don't care, but stop telling me I'm being paranoid. And you know what? Stop fueling your paranoia by searching his phone and searching his watch. You have seen enough to know what you know, that your husband's desires are not 100% strictly opposite sex, heterosexual. And if you are indeed, as you claim, okay with that, be okay with it. Stop searching for evidence of it.
Hi, Dan. Mom from the Midwest here. I have a 13-year-old boy who is just starting to find the joys of exploring his own body, which I think is great. We've had a lot of, you know, preemptive porn conversations about, you know, like what's real and what isn't. And so far that has all gone really well. The issue that I'm running into is that he has been using public spaces in our house for private things. I will be gone for some periods of the day and then come home to find presents on the couch pillows. I confronted him the first time that this happened and said, you know, masturbation is normal and healthy, but I don't want to see any evidence of it. And here are some tissues that you can use for cleaning up. You can either throw them in the trash or flush them. And I thought that that would be mortifying enough that it would never happen again. But today I came home and there were new stains. I made him wash the pillows and I was honestly not hiding my disgust very well. What else can I do to get through to him that this is not okay, and that it needs to stay in his own private space, or that I just don't want to see any evidence of it?
You are under no obligation, under these circumstances, to hide your disgust. What your son is doing is disgusting. Not masturbating. Masturbating is not disgusting. It's the inconsideration that he's showing for you, for anybody else that might share that living space with the two of you. How inconsiderate and selfish he's being. So that's what you should target your disgust at. Like, yes, leaving your bodily fluids around for other people to encounter, it's rude. If he was peeing all over the floor, all over the seat, you would say something and you would be disgusted and angry without any hesitancy. You hesitate to be disgusted or angry about what he's doing because you don't want him to feel shame about masturbation. You've been really clear that masturbation is normal, it's natural, it's healthy. What is not normal, what is not healthy, what is not tolerable is the degree of inconsideration that your son is demonstrating for you, for your comfort, for the fact that this is a shared space, shared living space. He does not, like Jay and Big Mouth, get to come all over, at least Jay and Big Mouth, the pillows that he's coming all over are private pillows in his bedroom. Get him an extra cum pillow if he watched a little too much Big Mouth a few years ago and he's got a pillow thing. But I think he's just got a selfish, inconsiderate thing going on. Also possible that maybe there's something about your disgust that's a turn on. Ugh, unfortunately, there are people out there who are just, it's not just about thoughtlessness. It's not just about inconsideration. There's something about other people's revulsion that turn them on. Ugh, you're going to want to push back hard against that without playing into it. Now, you're not going to be able to help it if it's kind of a kink for him and it's kind of a turn on to know that you're like, ooh, yuck, but you can raise the cost of ooh yucking you if this is intentional by just making it not something that, even if this is a turn on for him and yuck, ew, what an awful thing to have to think about, that he's willing to do. If coming on pillows, if leaving his jizz around for mom to find results in Wi-Fi being shut off or his phone being taken away, he'll knock it the fuck off. It may be, though, that he's just not thinking. You know, people talk about post-nut clarity. Let's hope it's that he's just not thinking. Sometimes there's post-nut obliviousness, and he just may not be thinking it through. If the last time he did it and didn't think and was inconsiderate of you, your comfort, your pillows, your shared spaces, he didn't have his phone for a month, he'll think it through next time. It'll lodge in his brain. And whatever his motivations might be, whether there's something in this for him that we don't want to think about or whether he's just being post-nut oblivious, he will remember not to come on the pillows. Ugh. I would, however, encourage you to cut up a bath towel, cut it up into squares, give him those squares, and then rather than burning through a lot of tissues, this could be an opportunity for him to learn how to do his own fucking laundry and toss those towels, when he's used them a few times, into the laundry with the rest of his clothes that he can take responsibility for himself now, too. This episode is brought to you by Beducated, the world's biggest platform for the kind of sex education you didn't get but always wanted. So, Let's say you're looking to spice things up in the bedroom or the playroom. You want to take your pleasure to the next level. Beducated brings pleasure-based sex education to your bedroom or your playroom with over 100 online courses from the world's top sex experts. Whether you're single or in a relationship, Beducated is a safe space for everyone, regardless of sexual orientation or gender. Their courses will help you enjoy sex more by demystifying the things you've always been curious about and helping you communicate better with your partner or partners about the things you're already doing but want to do better, or the things you've always wanted to try. Beducated offers a variety of courses. It's one of their standout features, courses covering everything from online dating to adventurous play, from tantra to kink, or just getting started kissing. You can choose to learn on your own or with your partner, and their content, Beducated's content, is inclusive, embracing all races, sexual orientations, and genders. In addition to those deep dive courses, there are also quickies, short and informative video clips. The quickies on threesomes manage to cover everything from jealousy to STI safety to finding potential threesome partners in just a few really great informative minutes. So if you're inexperienced and curious about something new like threesomes or DS that you want to explore with a trusted partner or a new partner, those conversations can sometimes be hard to get started. Sometimes people are self-conscious. Watching quickies together could really help you get that conversation going. And right now, Beducated has an exclusive offer for my listeners. Get 40% off their yearly pass by using my special coupon code SAVAGE. That's right, 40% off. And that 40% is locked in for life. Plus, you can try all Beducated courses for 1 day free with no risk, thanks to their 14-day money-back guarantee. Say yes to pleasure. Say yes to knowledge. Say yes to becoming Beducated. Visit Beducated.com today and let your journey to better sex begin now. That's Beducated, Beducated.com. Use the coupon code SAVAGE for your exclusive 40% off the yearly pass.
Hi, seeing the tech savvy youth. I am a 29-year-old pansexual woman that is living in the South. And I'll be getting weight loss surgery, and I honestly don't know how to roll it out to prospective partners that I'm going to be seeing, because I'm single. I am on the dating apps, and while I am proud of my decision, like, it's not something that I'm willing to share with a lot of people right now, but there will be a drastic change in my appearance. And so any advice that you could give, I would greatly appreciate it.
You should just be matter of fact about this, especially if you're considering, you know, being on the dating apps now, getting together with somebody now, hooking up with somebody now, dating somebody now, before your weight loss surgery. The weight loss surgery itself is going to be a major disruptor in your life. There'll be a time where you're in recovery, you're in surgery and recovery, and you might not be able to continue to see someone, you know, during that time as regularly as you might like to. So just tossing it out there. Look, I'm happy to go on a date. Would love to meet you. Heads up, I'm going to be having weight loss surgery in the next couple of weeks or a month from now, or whenever your surgery date is set. And just disclosing that, of course, they'll understand that there may be, after that weight loss surgery, a radical change in your appearance. But more importantly, particularly in the short run, they'll understand that you may not be as available for dating as you would otherwise. So yeah, just be matter of fact about it. As matter of fact with any prospective person that you might want to go on a date with, as you were with me. And I don't think this is something you have to necessarily disclose in advance of that first date. You know, if the surgery is a month or two out and you want to meet up with somebody, that's not a lifelong commitment. And meeting up with somebody for a single date to check them out so they can check you out, you don't have to give them your full medical history, including a list of any upcoming scheduled medical procedures. You're just looking to spend a little time with somebody, have a good time. And then if you want to see them again, then disclose. And then, of course, bundled with that disclosure is the fact of an incoming radical change in your appearance. And as with so many things, you telling someone that you've just begun to date or you're thinking about dating this thing about you, you're telling them one thing about you. one thing they may like to or need to know, and their reaction is going to tell you everything you need to know about them and whether you're going to want to continue to see them yourself. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the makers of my mattress and the makers of your next mattress. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences. The Helix Sleep lineup offers 14 unique mattresses, including a new collection of 6 luxury models called Helix Elite. These mattresses are loaded up with super high-tech features like a built-in cooling cover, comfort layers tailored to sleeping position support, and edge reinforcement. And every Helix Elite mattress comes with a 15-year manufacturer's warranty and the same 100-night trial as the rest of Helix mattresses. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz now to find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. For that 100-night trial, you get to try out your new Helix mattress, see how your body adjusts, and if you decide it's not the best fit for you, you are welcome to return it for a full refund. Right now, Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for my listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/savage for 20% off. This is their best offer yet. It won't last long. Go to Helix. Go now. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hi, Dan. Long story short, I wanted to ask if I properly disengaged with a narcissist that I had a situationship over the years with. We weren't together. We basically had a friends with benefits situation, kind of like a long distance situation. I realized he was a narcissist a few months ago after not seeing him for a few years. There were some yellow flags over the years, but basically he had a projected image of himself. I thought he was an empathetic person that dedicated his life to serve others. He was a psychiatrist, but long story short, I realized that he was a damaged person and a very hurtful person, and I disengaged with him and cut the tether this week. I know with narcissists, a lot of the advice is to just disengage and don't tell them your feelings. Don't tell them what they are. Just get out, leave, you know? Since this is long distance, the way I did that was basically sending him a final closure text and blocking him. The way I did that was with respect, because I'm a respectful person. I've only sent him love. I've never treated him badly. And I don't stoop to his level. And I said to him, you know, I've thought about our dynamic and I've decided to move on. I'm cutting off communication now. I wish you nothing but love, and blocked. Do you think I did this correctly?
Joining me to help tackle this question, Rebecca Fishbein, is a Brooklyn-based culture writer and the author of Good Things Happen to People You Hate. She recently wrote an article for Bustle exploring all the ways in which therapy speak is taking over how we talk about and understand our relationships. Hey, Rebecca, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So define therapy speak.
Therapy speak is prescriptive language used to describe certain therapeutic concepts. So like the concept of boundaries or self-care or using the word toxic, they're real terms, they're real concepts. You might learn them in therapy, you might hear them on social media. People have been using them more and more in everyday conversation. Sometimes that's great. Sometimes, you know, it can be hurtful to the person on the other side of the interaction.
It often seems when I hear people use therapy speak, kind of in the way the caller did, but definitely in the ways in which the people that you write about in your article at Bustle have, it's to shut the argument down or wind it. Like, I'm establishing a boundary. Well, you can't argue with that. I'm engaged in an act of self-care here. You're not allowed to challenge that. Or I feel unsafe. Well, you're just going to make somebody feel more unsafe if you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, the experts that I spoke with and the people that I interviewed who were sort of on the like receiving the therapy speak all said that it felt like getting a clinical diagnosis, which, you know, a layperson can't necessarily diagnose somebody with narcissism. Or
someone can be narcissistic. Someone can be, but narcissistic personality disorder, which is kind of what people mean now when they throw the narcissism label around, is really rare.
Yeah, I mean, it does exist. About 2 to 5% of the population has narcissistic personality disorder or NPD. Narcissism itself, which, like, you know, is an inflated ego, that exists on a spectrum. Some people have more narcissistic tendencies, some people don't. It doesn't really make you a good or bad person to be anywhere on that spectrum. But NPD is like a real thing. And if you are in a relationship with somebody who has NPD, it can be very destabilizing.
And we've all been in a sort of parasocial relationship with somebody with NPD for the last 6 or 7 years, Donald J. Trump. And maybe that's made us all a little hyper-conscious about NPD narcissism, toxic narcissism, as a phenomena, but I see people reading it into romantic relationships, as you wrote in your article about people reading it into friendships more and more often. People can't just say, they didn't want what I want, my feelings got hurt. That seems too boring and average. So there's this desire to round up a conflict, an interpersonal conflict, a relationship, a romantic conflict, to something cosmic. You know, it wasn't just that we were wrong for each other, they were wrong for me, or they didn't want me. They're mentally ill.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because when you're in a relationship where you feel like you're not being treated right, it's sometimes easier to attribute it to the other person having narcissistic personality disorder because it's like, oh, I fell victim to this horrible person, which sometimes that is the case. There are people who have been in relationships with true narcissists and it's horrible. And sometimes it's just people are shitty to each other and it sucks. Like, it doesn't mean you should stay in a relationship with someone who's shitty to you. It's just they're not necessarily a narcissist.
There is this temptation now, though, it seems, to round everything up to they're narcissistic, they're toxic, as opposed to wanting to round things down to it didn't work out, or they're just your run-of-the-mill average shitty person who treated me badly, which sometimes happens. Now, to the caller's question, if this was somebody with narcissistic personality disorder who happened to be a shrink, did they end it the right way, do you think? The final text message in the block.
If the person did have NPD, then yeah, I mean, there's no reason. Like, if you're in a relationship with somebody who's a narcissist, they don't have empathy and they can't understand love. So it kind of doesn't matter how you end it. You should cut it off is probably the general advice that I would give.
There's no sense engaging or arguing with somebody about it.
Right. You're not going to win that argument.
Do you think it could be maybe a narcissistic trait, though? Not evidence of NPD, not a diagnosis, to send that kind of text message and then block somebody. You know, I'm done. I'm out of this relationship. You're a terrible person. And I'm going to end the discussion. You're not even allowed to respond to me. To me, that seems a little, not calling it narcissistic, a little self-involved. Now, the caller may not feel safe engaging with this person. There's that word. And I understand that. I have advised people in the past to send, if they need to, one final message and then block if every time they try to break up with somebody, they get into an argument about whether they're allowed to break up with somebody. You're allowed to block. But if this person is generally reasonable, not allowing them to respond to that final fuck off text message seems a little narcissistic potentially to me.
I would generally recommend having a conversation with somebody at the very, like, you can know that you're ending it and that's going to be the end, but it's good to give somebody a chance to respond. It's why ghosting is a bad idea. Like, you should always give the other person a chance to have their say, or at least like understand why you're ending something with them. I wouldn't want to be broken up with by somebody just sending me a text message being like, it's over, and blocking me. Obviously, if in cases of abuse or if you really do feel unsafe, then cut it off. I can't really like say that someone's being narcissistic by, you know, ending something that way, because I don't know the particulars of their relationship. And like, sometimes you are just fed up with somebody and you told them a million times that you want to be treated better and that's it for you. And sometimes,
or you've attempted to end something and then your phone gets blown up. You get 100 text messages.
Yeah, and it's
that, I think a block is deserved there, perhaps. We would have to know more specifics about the particular situation here. But I do think, you know, I'm having my say and you're not allowed to have your say is kind of a narcissistic trait, or potentially a narcissistic trait or move.
I think we've grown very averse to conflict, which is not, I mean, that's what I kind of gleaned from doing this research for this article is that people, especially because we have cell phones where we can just text people and we never have to speak to anybody if we don't want to, it's really easy to just be like, hey, I'm setting a boundary and I'm over it and we're not going to have any more discussion, because the other person in the interaction is just this invisible phone thing. But there is another person on the other side who is being affected by that. And it's good to at least think about the person on the other side of the interaction. You don't have to like them, but you should consider that, you know, they have their own sense of interiority and maybe they wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like to be block dumped. That sucks.
This just comes back to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Don't treat other people in ways that you wouldn't want to be treated yourself. That comes up with ghosting a lot. Almost everybody who's ever called me to complain about being ghosted, if I pin them down, they will admit to having ghosted someone themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to do. Like, I've definitely ghosted people, which I'm not, you know, super proud of, but sometimes you just feel stressed about conflict.
What's the response to your article, Ben?
It was pretty explosive. There was a lot of discussion that died down for a bit, which was nice. But people have a lot of feelings about this because there are people who really feel like they're just learning how to speak up for themselves and using therapy speak or using like a blueprint you might find on social media for like how to end a relationship or set a boundary has given them more of a voice. And I think that that's fair. Like the general advice now is, you know, we should be learning how to put our masks on the airplane before putting it on somebody else. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes people are forgetting about the putting the mask on the other person.
You write about people with this sort of sense of their own interiority and how they're being made to feel in certain relationships and certain circumstances and losing sight of the interiority of other people and how they might feel. And you can be conscious of how somebody else might feel, you know, even if you're just sending them a breakup text, without letting go or losing sight of or deprioritizing your own feelings and safety. That you can do those two things at once. You can hold both of those things in your head at the same time. I'm going to treat other people how I would like to be treated because other people have feelings too.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, like, people can be toxic, but often dynamics are toxic. You can have a toxic friendship without the friend being a toxic person. You can have a toxic romantic relationship without like the partner being a toxic person. It's just,
I think that's so smart. Sometimes people talk about chemistry in romantic relationships, even chemistry in friendships. Sometimes the chemistry comes together and it is toxic. The two of you together are toxic. Not either of you as individuals are toxic. Just the way, you know, people talk about bad sex almost exclusively as something that's done to us. Like I went with this person and bad sex was inflicted on me, as opposed to together we had bad sex because we didn't click or connect and it wasn't a great experience. And rather than that being a meteor that hit me, bad sex or a toxic friendship, that was just something about our dynamic that made the sex bad or the friendship toxic.
Yeah. And human relationships are really complicated, as you know, you of all people know, because you've been given this advice for decades, but people are complicated and relationships can be really hard. And sometimes a person is abusive and you should get away from them.
Rebecca Fishbein, Brooklyn-based culture writer, author of Good Things Happen to People You Hate. Her article at Bustle is Therapy Speak Making Us Selfish. Rebecca, thank you so much for jumping online with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Dan, this is a gay male, southern part of the U.S., reaching out to ask about apps for meeting people who are in open relationships and looking for maybe just a weekend encounter to hang out and to fuck and have sex. But I don't know if people typically go on Grindr or Scruff and use those apps to do that. And just wanted to see what you recommend as the best way to go about meeting people who are open and willing to kind of play and have fun for a night or two.
You're pulling my leg, right? Are there guys on dating apps and hookup apps for gay men who are partnered and just looking for someone to mess around with on the side? Yeah. Yeah, of course there are. One of the chief complaints you hear from people unhappy about what they encountered on dating apps are complaints from guys who were annoyed at the number of guys they heard from or were approached by or slid into their DMs who were partnered and just looking for a hookup. Now, if you're on Grindr, you're just looking for a hookup yourself. But, you know, some people want to hook up with people who are free and available and not partnered because they're hoping maybe a hookup can lead to something more serious. Just because some people out there complain loudly and longly about all the partnered guys on Grindr and Scruff and every other dating and hookup app for gay men, that doesn't mean there aren't scores of men out there who aren't complaining because that was exactly what they were looking for, exactly what they wanted, or they were open to it. Maybe they're open for a relationship and are hoping to hook up with somebody and it could lead to more. And in the meantime, they're happy to hook up with guys where it's just a one-off, and partnered guys are good for one-offs or good for threesomes or whatever. So yes, I am here to reassure you that wherever gay men gather, online or off, you will find plenty of partnered guys who are in open, committed relationships, who are looking for outside sex partners to play with together or play with one-on-one. And you would have known that if you'd gotten on Grindr for even 30 seconds, which is what leads me to believe that you might be pulling my leg with this question. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's check out a couple of comments on last week's show posted at savage.love. Says by Dan Fan, thank you, Dan, for your tireless debunking of the shaved pubes equals pedophilia prejudice. May we all someday live in a world where we do whatever we damn well like with our body hair. I agree with you, by Dan Fan, and honest to God, I want to shake these people who insist that shaved crotches equals pedophilia and say to them, look, if you think someone who's sucking the cock of an adult male who shaved off his pubes is thinking about sucking the cock of a 9-year-old boy, then you are the one who's thinking about sucking the cock of a 9-year-old boy, says Ted the Bellhop. There are so many straight male cuckolds out there that Dan gets tired of talking about them. The queer woman who called into the show who wants a one-sided open relationship should find one of them. Thank you, Ted. There's even a dating service out there for women looking for one-sided open relationships, Venus Connections, created by the Venus Cuckoldress, guest here many times on the Savage Lovecast. Says Beat Up Ford, the problem with the word compersion is it sounds like a designer cat breed that an eccentric person might pay thousands of dollars for. Adds slow-mo pomo, sounds too much like compulsion to work for me, but maybe that's just me. Thanks to everyone who left comments this week at savage.love on the podcast and the column. Thanks to everybody who posted your social media accounts this week about the show. A big extra special thank you to framboise_NYC, who posted to Instagram that they renewed their Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast. We really do appreciate all your comments, all your social media posts, and all of your support. And now, listener response calls.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling in response to the guy who is 49 and is wondering if he should lie about his age. You know what? I'm actually in that same position. I am fortunate enough that people think I'm 36, but I'm 50. So I'm in this weird space where men who are in their 50s think I'm too young. I'm not even interested in guys in their 20s or 30s. But I went on a date with a guy who was 35. I didn't know he was 35. And when he asked how old I was, I just told him, I said, oh, I'm 50. And he was like, oh, I'm 35. And then all communication ended after that. And I assumed it had to do with my age. So when I put my age on the app, I get the, how old are your photos? You're 50. You don't look 50. And I thought, okay, this is not working out. So I got rid of the age, but now the age has to become a conversation at some point. So I can kind of understand what that guy was saying. Trust me, I am not interested in fucking 20-year-olds. I didn't want to fuck 20-year-olds when I was 20. I definitely don't want to fuck them when I'm now. Ideally, I would love a man 45 to 55 and up in that range. But they think I'm too young. Someone let that caller know. You're not alone. And I guess it is a blessing that we look great for 50. But, boy, it's annoying. Also, what's your routine? Shut up. I hate that fucking question.
Hi, Dan. This is just a feedback call for the woman in the latest episode who's heavily pregnant and negotiating sex currently. I just wanted to acknowledge that it is really weird at this stage. Your body's really big, you're really uncomfortable. And also that little human inside of you is getting more and more powerful and starting to move and kick. And sometimes they'll do that during sex. And it's really weird. And it's a head fuck. But as Dan said, it will pass. That human will be out of you soon. I just wanted to also say that this is a great time to talk to your partner about sex, what it's going to look like in weeks, months, years to come. Because as Dan said, it's not going to go back to the way it was before. You'll have a tiny infant, you'll be healing, you'll be breastfeeding, you'll be getting zero sleep. That infant will grow into a baby, and then you'll have a toddler, and then you'll have a five-year-old who comes into your room in the middle of the night asking for a glass of water. It's not going to be bad, but your sex life is going to be different. So now's a really good time to talk about it in advance rather than getting caught out.
This is for the caller in episode 869, the gay guy who was talking about dumping his boyfriend. Dude, I agree with everything Dan said. You need to get out of this relationship. I was you about 6 or 7 years ago. I'm here from the future to tell you it is so much better on the other side. The first month or two is going to be really foreign, and that's fine. You've probably got a couple blind spots. Ask some friends that you trust and work on those. But moving forward, you're going to find yourself in a relationship that you're sexually compatible with your partner, and it is so much better. And also, you're going to find yourself in a relationship where you trust them. So I'm just here from the future to tell you it is so much better on the other side. Do it. Work on yourself, and good luck.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's Lovecast or something to say about something I said on this week's Lovecast? Go to savage.love/askdan to record your question or your comment. Or you can use the voice memo app on your phone and email us your question or comment to q@savage.love. Or you can give us a call and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. Reminder for my Magnum subs, Savage Love Live next Thursday, June 29th, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, live from the Aspen Ideas Festival. Watch for the link in your email Thursday morning. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow me on Instagram and Blue Sky @DanSavage. Follow Rebecca Fishbein on Instagram and Twitter @BFishBFish. Her collection of essays, Good Things Happen to People You Hate, is available now wherever books are sold. Follow Dr. Kelsey Burke on Twitter @KelseyBurke. And you can learn more about her research at her website, KelseyBurke.com, and get both of her books, The Pornography Wars and Christians Undercovers, wherever books are sold. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy, we will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for commenting. And thank you for your questions.